from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. By now, the story of Flint, Michigan is all too familiar. A shift to the Flint River in an attempt to cut costs in a cash-strapped city. Corroded pipes, water poisoned with lead. In Detroit, public schools falling apart, deep fiscal problems. This week, 94 of the city's 97 public schools closed as teachers protested proposed uncertain pay and crumbling facilities. What's the right approach to help cities in deep trouble? This hour, On Point, fixing cities in Michigan and beyond. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What is the answer when a city, a community, loses its footing, fails, falls? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here, Detroit public school teachers protesting in the streets of the city earlier this week. No pay, no work. And there wasn't work in a whole lot of those cities. Yesterday in Flint, Michigan, President Obama saying that he had the backs of Flint residents.
I will not rest, and I'm going to make sure that the leaders at every level of government don't rest until every drop of water that flows to your homes is safe to drink and safe to cook with and safe to bathe in, because that's part of the basic responsibilities of a government in the United States of America.
What's going on in Detroit, in Flint, in Michigan, and what can we learn for the rest of the country? Joining me now from Detroit is Stephen Henderson, host of the WDET radio show Detroit Today, editor of the editorial page at the Detroit Free Press, won the Pulitzer Prize in 2014 for his commentary at the paper. Stephen Henderson, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Is there a common thread between Detroit and Flint and all the woe we've seen in the urban trouble spots of Michigan?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the most common thread, or the most important common thread, is disinvestment. The tragic disinvestment in our cities that goes back not 10 years or 20 years, but 40 or 50 years here in the state of Michigan. The idea that state government has not sort of focused on urban policy, ways to lift up cities, ways to get people to live in them, ways to create jobs and provide educational opportunities in them. We've spent a long time undermining all of those things here in the state of Michigan, and so that's how you get to a place where people are, you know, leaning over a ledger in Flint trying to save money on clean drinking water because the population has dwindled so much and the tax base has shriveled up, so that there is no other alternative.
You say disinvestment, Stephen, investment, but is this about what the government's doing, or is it about an economy that just fell to pieces?
I think it's both. I think certainly the deindustrialization that we've seen nationwide, the erosion of the manufacturing base was devastating for cities here in Michigan. I mean, places like Detroit and Flint grew up around the idea that people could make things and the economy would thrive on the backs of that work. But at the same time, you think of policies like our transit policies or housing policies, the suburbanization of places like Detroit and Flint, the separation of places like Detroit and Flint from the wealthier suburbs around them. Those are things that were driven by government decisions and government policies. And I think if you look at what's happened in those cities, those are the things that just as much as the degradation of the economy have put them in the position where they have to have an emergency manager, or they have to file bankruptcy, or again, have to sit over a ledger and try to figure out how to save money on clean drinking water.
I want to figure out what went wrong here and why. Yesterday in Flint, of course, President Obama was in town, but Governor Rick Snyder, Republican, spoke in front of an angry crowd there. They booed and heckled him.
I wanted to come here and tell you, you didn't create this problem. Government failed you. And I apologize, and I will work hard to fix that.
He says government failed you. The crowd, you hear them there yelling back, you did, you did.
Yeah.
What are the politics at work in that encounter, Stephen?
Well, some of the politics at work there are about the governor's reluctance so far to go and face the people of Flint in a public forum, right? He's done some online town halls.
Yeah.
He's gone to individual people's homes. He's not gone and allowed the people of the city to sort of sit with him in a public forum and tell him what they think about what happened. And so yesterday really was the first opportunity to do that. I think that had a lot to do with the way he was treated. You know, there's also just a very, very angry strain of feeling of betrayal among people in Flint. I mean, their government officials failed them in one of the most fundamental ways in terms of government services that you could imagine. And so, I mean, this is a governor who cannot run again for his office because we have term limits here in the state of mm-hmm. Michigan. But certainly if he could, he would face an enormous, enormous hurdle because of this. I mean, the anger that people, not just in Flint, but in places all over the state, feel about why this happened and how it happened is really tremendous.
Did his predecessors face that kind of anger as well, or is it something about his political philosophy? He's kind of a business guy, made a fortune in computers, and he brought in this philosophy that we're going to bring business practices into local government or school districts. Yeah. How's that working? How's that playing?
Well, I mean, you know, it depends on who you talk to, and it depends on where you look. I mean, here in the city of Detroit, the emergency management and the bankruptcy really did save us from financial disaster. I mean, there was no way to go forward without restructuring the debt that we had, and so that was a huge boon to the city of Detroit.
Basically, of course, going through bankruptcy and just getting sloughing off a lot of that debt.
Right, restructuring the debt, yeah, in a way that left more money for us to provide services. But emergency management has not worked as well in some other places. It's not worked in any school district because it doesn't allow for the emergency managers to boost revenue, which is the one thing that school districts really desperately need. Money follows kids. As long as a school district is losing children, there really isn't a way to get more money. And some cities have really struggled with emergency management, Flint being one of them. There are several others because they didn't have that kind of investment that Detroit did. You know, one of the things that we've been really on the governor's case about at the Free Press is that emergency management is not urban policy. It's a tool that the state has to deal with, you know, financial emergencies in local governments, and that's important. But urban policy has got to go broader than that. It's got to be broader than that. It's got to deal with how do you invest in cities? How do you invest in places and in people in ways that give them opportunities to stay out of financial trouble in the first place? And this is a governor who has, I think, failed universally at that. And he's not the first. I mean, he's a Republican, and it was sort of a business approach that he brought to this question. But the previous governor, Jennifer Granholm,
Democrat,
two terms, mm-hmm. Democrat, her idea of urban policy was a program really called Cool Cities, which was as vacuous as it sounds. I mean, there hasn't been a concerted effort to really look at what is it that is killing cities in the state of Michigan, and how do we reverse that in a way that invests in them and gets people to want to live in them and be able to live in them and work and be successful. There's just not anyone really talking about that.
I mean, this whole emergency manager set up in Michigan, and I think Michigan gives emergency managers the strongest hand of any state in the union. They can just straight out overrule elected officials, as I understand it. Sure. That has drawn a lot of heat. I mean, you had Darnell Early, who was Flint's emergency manager when they made this decision to use the treated water from the Flint River as the city's water supply back in 2014, and then moved over to be emergency manager of Detroit schools. These don't look like successive triumphs, Steve.
They haven't been, right?
And yet he's got all this power to overrule, to basically dictatorial power, essentially, right?
Yeah. I mean, so the emergency manager law is an outgrowth of the way that we structure cities here. Cities here are in Michigan, municipal government is a creation of state government. And it's a bargain really between the state and local communities. It says you can set up your own governance, but you have to follow these particular financial restrictions. You can't borrow more money than you can pay back. You can't make promises that you can't keep financially. You can't have your books out of balance. And there are all kinds of reporting requirements and markers that you have to.
Is that a bad thing? It doesn't sound so bad on the face of it. You don't want cities going haywire on the finance
side. Sure. Yeah. Well, and the state is ultimately responsible for any of the financial decisions that cities make. I mean, the money that we borrow at the municipal level ultimately is on the state's good faith and credit. So that relationship makes some sense. The emergency manager law was created to try to give the state a way to intervene in cities when they didn't uphold their end of that bargain. And for many years, it was a pretty weak law that put a manager in control, and he or she didn't have a whole lot of ability to overrule the Democratic infrastructure. Governor Snyder came in and said, this is a law that needs more teeth in order to be effective. And I don't think in principle he was wrong about that. Certainly the decisions that need to be made when a city is, you know, 33 times in the hole in terms of their debt have to be pretty dramatic. The problem, of course, is that this all takes place in the context of this disinvestment, that you are dealing with choices and decisions that are on a very small scale designed to balance the books. They are not designed to change the fortunes of those cities.
Shut it down. The word from teachers in Detroit this week after that their pay came into question. And of course, you've all heard about the deplorable physical plant conditions in Detroit schools. That was them chanting on Tuesday. On Monday, here's Ivy Bailey, interim president of the Detroit Federation of Teachers, talking with WXYZ TV in Detroit amid a teacher sick out in that city.
Every child has a right to a public education, but every teacher has the right to be paid for the work that they do. No one can expect us to work for free.
Kind of a mess there. Meanwhile, yesterday, President Obama at a roundtable of leaders in Flint to talk about the water crisis there. And here is the president drinking symbolically from a glass of filtered Flint water after all the lead crisis.
Generally, I have not been doing stunts here, but, you know. And this used a filter. The water around this table, was Flint water that was filtered, and it just confirms what we know scientifically, which is that if you're using a filter, if you're installing it, then Flint water at this point is drinkable.
The president having to reassure the city and the country that the whole population of Flint has something they can safely drink. Of course, notice there, it's after it's filtered, not when it comes straight out of the unfiltered tap. We're looking this hour at what happens when cities, school districts get in deep financial trouble, and Michigans are not the only, by any means, in this country facing that kind of problem. But we're looking at lessons from Michigan, from Detroit to Flint. Stephen Henderson is with us, host of the WDET radio show Detroit Today and editor of the editorial page at the Detroit Free Press. You can join us as well. What's your advice when things get really bad financially in a community or when they get bad or how to avoid getting there? What do you see in Detroit, in Flint, in their crises? Have you lived through that crisis in Detroit, in Flint, elsewhere? What do you think of Michigan's approach to crisis intervention, emergency managers sent in by the state to just take over? Stephen Henderson in Detroit, please stand by. I want to go to the capital of Michigan, Lansing, for just a moment. Jim Ananick is there. He's state senator. He represents the 27th District of Michigan. That includes parts of the city of Flint. Jim Ananick, thank you very much for being with us. Senator Ananick.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom. I appreciate it.
I think you're on the floor of the state senate there right now. You've been a big opponent of the emergency manager role. Why, Jim?
Well, there's a number of reasons. One, I've seen little to no evidence that taking away people's rights, taking away people's freedoms, taking away people's democracy has ever led to good results, one. And two, it's completely and utterly failed my community. I live in Flint. My wife and I and my 9-month-old are having a drink. We're trying to find ways to have safe water in our community and in our home. And, it's the emergency manager because he took away the voice of the people, took away any, there's no checks and balances, and it's just had devastating results. And I think it's pretty clearly it's a failed experiment, and we need to do what we can to replace it, or I think even more better would be to repeal it.
What about people who say, well, look, Flint, you clearly didn't manage your own affairs very well. You got in such deep trouble, we had to take extreme measures.
Well, the problem with the way that we finance state government and local governments is that state government many years ago said, okay, we'll take the money, trust us, we can do a better job, and we'll give it back to you. Well, we've lost $65 million in revenue sharing over the last 15 years. So if we had that $65 million back, we wouldn't be in this condition. You can't cut your way to prosperity. One, if you look at what happened versus Flint versus Detroit, there was a large infusion, hundreds of millions of dollars in state dollars and hundreds of millions of dollars in private dollars, along with expertise. In our city, I'll tell you this right now, Darnell Early is no Kevin Orr. So, I wouldn't even say the B team. We definitely didn't get AAA. I think we got the Lansing Lugnuts.
Are you letting your 9-month-old drink tap water in Flint now, Senator Ennick?
No, he's never touched it. I use bottled water exclusively for my child. My wife and I will use filtered water or bottled water ourselves. But I'm fortunate enough to be able to afford a bottled water for my family. And, hopefully we can get to a point where the water is safe again because, people shouldn't have to deal with this.
Senator Ennick, please stand by there at the State Senate in Lansing, Michigan. Stephen Henderson, you're listening in from Detroit. And, of course, Senator Ennick mentions two emergency managers, one Darnell Early, who made the decision to use treated water from the Flint River, who's now emergency manager at Detroit schools. And he's saying, hey, no great track record there. But he's speaking in different terms about Kevin Orr. Remind us about the role of Kevin Orr, the role he played, Stephen.
So Kevin Orr was the emergency manager here in Detroit, one of the most accomplished bankruptcy attorneys in the country. I mean, somebody who really understands that process and how to maximize the potential for his clients. There's no comparison between he and Darnell Early.
Who is out now as the Detroit emergency manager.
Right, he's no longer here. And Senator Ananick is right. That's one of the huge problems is that Flint did not get the kind of things that Detroit had. But I want to share some numbers with you too.
Yes.
About what has gone on in Flint. Just since 2000, the city has lost 25% of its revenue from income and property taxes, 32% of the revenue sharing, and Senator Ananick was talking about that, but 21% of its population and about 40% of the jobs in the Central Core. Again, this is the context that's led us to this whole idea of emergency management, and it's not just decline; it's disinvestment. It's decision making at the state level, and some at the national level that sort of pushes our cities, urban cores, into these really isolated, poor pockets where there is not revenue to provide services, and there's not enough money to balance the books. That's the context that's producing all of these sort of emergency management.
Stephen, stand by in Detroit if you would, and Senator Jim Ananick in Lansing, Michigan, where the revenue sharing from where it goes out to the cities and towns of Detroit. With us right now from Washington is Kevin Orr, former emergency manager of the city of Detroit, appointed by Governor Rick Snyder. 2013, served until 2015. He's now at the law firm Jones Day in Washington. Kevin Orr, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Boy, a lot of people have come out of their work as emergency managers practically chased out of town. You are seen as having done fairly well with Detroit. When you look at Flint, is there a point at which the economic base of a city is so degraded that it just doesn't work anymore?
Well, I think what Senator Ananuk and Stephen both referenced is sort of the metrics and the overall holistic problem of the urban center, and sort of the lack of, both at the state and the national level, focus on the model, which is evolving from the traditional one post-war, where you're going to have increasing population, a solid tax base, good-paying working-class jobs, to urban centers all throughout the country that are experiencing serious challenges in that regard. So, you know, that's sort of a macroeconomic issue from my perspective. On the microeconomic issue in Detroit, we were dealing with 25% population loss, 40% of our streetlights were out, 20% of the housing stock was dilapidated, which meant that your tax base, which was taxed at the highest level possible, was eroding. And the jobs, the good jobs, obviously, we had participated in the Chrysler bankruptcy and GM bankruptcy, had fled too. So you really had to take a step back and look at it and say, okay, what do we need to do here to do three things? One, rationalize the balance sheet. Two, stabilize the patient, which is the city. And three, preserve the value proposition for when we leave, which hopefully is very soon. And we were fortunate to have a number of parties. It wasn't just the emergency manager. It was the civic community, the governor to a degree, certainly the White House in terms of federal grants, the foundation community that came with the grand bargain really pulled together to get us out of a financial crisis that included two violations. A 37-year-old Clean Water Act case existed in Detroit, and two consent decrees with Department of Justice over at our police department, for instance, for use of force and a reasonable confinement. So it was a extreme situation, but there were a lot of folks that pitched in to get us out of there.
Jim Ananick, Senator Ananick in Lansing. I mean, for a long time, General Motors drove Flint like crazy, and it did quite well. When that engine cooled way, way down, do you look at Flint and say this is still viable if we just had the right policy, the right support, or is it a kind of an endless life support candidate, unviable?
I think it's an endless life support the way we look at it now. And I think to the heart of Kevin Orr's point, to Mr. Orr's point,
yes,
is we have not had a urban policy in our country, in our state, for a long period of time. And what Kevin mentioned, you know, with all the players coming together with a shared goal, that's what we need in our urban communities. Our urban communities built this country, and, you know, and folks have a right to move wherever they want. I that's completely fine, of course, but you can't leave people behind. And I think one of the points I think we have to make when it comes to state policy is it needs to be about better lives, not just bottom lines, right? So you have to have a balance sheet that works, but at the same time, you have to think about the individuals that live in those communities. You know, Kevin and Stephen both brought up really good points about Detroit and Flint and other issues. We've also lost probably 18 to 20,000 students in our schools. So we have to have a stabilized and functioning school system, a stabilized and functioning city government, and then make sure that we do what we can for economic development, stabilization of home values, and have an actual policy that leads us towards valuing that everybody, no matter where they live, has a shot at some sort of prosperity and a decent life. And I think too often, and I think Kevin made some really good points about this, is a problem across the country that urban communities have been allowed to spiral. And then once it gets down that spiraling, if you don't stop it and make a serious investment, but it is an investment, you know, you're gonna continue to see these problems all across the country. And I think it's unacceptable as a country is as strong as ours to allow that to happen.
And we've seen other states, not far from you there in Illinois, major, major problems. Stephen Henderson, when you look at Flint, do you see a community that looks viable to you? Can Michigan, the state of Michigan, afford to revitalize Flint, to bring it back and make it a workable urban proposition again?
Well, I mean, it's certainly about way more than getting the water back in order. I mean,
yeah,
you can do that, and it's still going to have all of these problems. One of the things that's really interesting about Flint is that as it has declined, the communities around it have thrived. Jobs have moved there. People have moved there. Tax base has moved there. And Flint does not benefit from that. And so you create this sort of isolated den of mm-hmm. poverty and isolation that does not connect to other communities. Same thing here in the city of Detroit. One of the things that we need to start talking about is whether that makes a lot of sense and whether that is fair. Should there be larger sort of tax bases and communities the shared sort of sacrifice and support for the services in cities, which still are cultural centers and mm-hmm. business centers and things like that. We've got to be able to get to the place where we have that conversation. We don't have a governor in Michigan right now who seems the least bit interested in that conversation, and we don't have a legislature. I mean, Senator Ananick is a Democrat in a distinct minority in Lansing. The Republican majority there is also not interested in that, and I think you don't get close to fixing someplace like Flint without talking about those things in addition to emergency management and the other things that we're doing.
Kevin Orr, you did well with Detroit in your time there, but when you say you need a new kind of urban formula, are there the resources there? I mean, traditionally, we didn't really have, or did we have, government planning that took care of this? We had a growing economy. That took care of it. Are the resources there now to save a city like Flint, get the city center on a good track?
Absolutely, Tom. And something Senator Ananick and Stephen just said in terms of urban policy, I mean, we have created these concentric circles of an urban policy desert with the cities in the middle, but the surrounding suburbs thriving. We've seen other models, though, over the past 30 years. I mean, you may recall, Tom, back in the 80s in Miami, Paradise Lost, Race Riot, mm-hmm. The prognostications that it was never going to come back again, front cover of the periodic magazines, Time and Newsweek, with The Last American Turned the Lights Off. We saw this in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. In the 90s, we had D.C. Control Board fleeing populations out to the suburbs, the urban core being destitute. We saw it in New York City with the Municipal Systems Corporation in the 70s. I still believe that America is still great, and that America has the resources if it has the fortitude and intent to focus on these problems. But I do think it really does come from a level of leadership and commitment at a national level as well as at a state level around this country to talk about what we're going to do to provide opportunity, as Senator Ananick said, at least the hope for prosperity or the ability to have a living wage in these urban centers so we don't abandon them. Because at the end of the day, Tom, if we do, the reality is they're going to express themselves in other ways for the rest of us, whether it's a need of assistance, whether it's crime, whether it's low educational outcomes, unfortunately, low early childhood development issues. I mean, these are significant issues for a significant proportion of American citizens in the 21st century that I firmly believe we have both the resources and ability if we put our focus on it. We're a great country. This is the challenge of our day. We need to seize the moment and get at it.
Senator Ananick, you're there in Lansing at the state capitol. You're in the minority. Do you see, given the horrors that we witnessed in Flint, do you see a state legislature that's turning around to say, well, let's do things differently here. Let's put more resources there. We can do that. Is that a rising sentiment, Jim?
No, I mean we're putting money into the problem, and in some cases, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. But you still have to have sort of that first acknowledgement that there's a problem. I mean, if you look at the Detroit Public Schools, if you look at Flint, if you look at the veterans, the abuses of veterans in the west side of the state, corrections problems, all these other issues, you have to come to the conclusion that okay, some of the policies aren't working. And you could basically argue that they failed in many parts. But if you're not willing to come to that conclusion, it's really hard to have that conversation. And one thing that's important to note as well, in many cases our policy at the state level, we get the money in Lansing and we distribute it, like for roads, for example. We don't distribute roads based on where people actually live and work. We send it based on road lane miles. So places where there's nobody at gets a large percentage of money. When if we just had a sensible policy, you know, the roads in southeast Detroit and Flint and places like that wouldn't be so bad. So if we just had a policy where people actually live and work and where the economic engines are, got the majority of the money, that which is where all the money's coming from, we could, many of these problems would go away now. So, you know, we have to have those conversations, and I think, as Kevin mentioned, it's not a choice, right? I mean, the longer we wait on these issues, the more what's going to cost us in the long run, and the more I don't know what you exactly want to call it, folks will be checked out or get angry, and then the actions could come to a place where, they're going to demand action. And, I'm not sure how far off we are from that. I mean, you see the disconnect and the anger that's coming and many people supporting Donald Trump. You know, I mean, it's coming from somewhere, and I think it's this fact that they don't feel that government actually serves them. And I think we have to come to a conclusion and start addressing that.
Senator Ananick, we've got it right there. We hear the live feed from the floor of the state legislature, the Senate there in Michigan, in Lansing. Thank you very much for being with us today, Senator Ananick.
Thank you for having me.
Kevin Orr, former emergency manager of the city of Detroit, joining us today from Washington there at Jones Day. Kevin Orr, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Tom, very much.
Stephen Henderson, stand by. Listeners, we'll come to your calls. This is On Point. Talking this hour about what happens when cities, school districts get in deep financial trouble, and lessons from Michigan, from Detroit to Flint, where we have seen so much woe in recent months and years. You can join us this hour. What do you think of Michigan's approach to crisis intervention, of the emergency manager sent in by the state to basically take over? How and why do things get so bad in the first place? Are elected officials who lead communities into the hole really capable of digging them out? When the economics of a place fail, who has what responsibility to the poor who get hit? Stephen Henderson is with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning editor of the editorial page at the Detroit Free Press and host of the WDET radio show there, Detroit Today. Here's President Obama in Flint, Michigan, saying the attitude toward government itself, he says, is one of the factors that led to the Flint water crisis and more.
This myth that government's always the enemy. That forgets that our government is us. It's us. You know, it's an extension of us, ourselves. You know, that attitude is as corrosive to our democracy as the stuff that resulted in lead in your water. Because what happens is it leads to systemic neglect.
But not everyone's been buying that. Republican Governor Rick Snyder here at a congressional hearing in March blamed a culture of government bureaucracy for the Flint water crisis.
The fact is, bureaucrats created a culture that valued technical competence over common sense. And the result was lead was leaching into the residents' water. That's why I'm committed to a complete and comprehensive change in state government that puts public health and safety first.
Well, he took a lot of heat for that, and of course, we see that the city did not have public health and safety first. In March, Flint council member Scott Kincaid talked with ABC 12, saying Michigan's series of emergency managers failed his city by focusing too much on budget cuts.
They cut, and they look at ways of saving money and not looking at providing services, and particularly in this case, providing clean, safe drinking water to this community.
And pretty soon there was none of that. We're going to look more nationally in just a moment. Steve Henderson, stand by in Detroit. Lots of callers have been waiting here. Tom in Detroit, Michigan, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air, Tom.
Yeah, hi to both of you. I came to Detroit in 1953 when I was 6 years old.
Okay.
There was 1,800,000 people within the physical boundaries of Detroit. We fast forward to today, we've got 680,000. So we've lost enough people, all right, out of this city to make up about the fourth or fifth largest city in this country.
Yeah.
But not only that, but you're talking about with that number of people having left, and Stephen talked about it at the top of the hour in terms of disinvestment.
Mm-hmm.
There was disinvestment in business and, as obvious, with people who left this city. And, you know, the emergency manager, we've had four here for the Detroit Public Schools. We had Robert Bob, Roy Roberts, Jack Martin, and Darnell Early.
Mm.
And, I mean, they have been nothing but abysmal failures. I mean, I've even heard a term, they came in and they gangstered on people.
Who or what is to blame for this, though, Tom? I mean, the auto industry fell apart in this country for a long time. You know, that's at the heart of that decline.
Right.
So
right.
Then what should happen?
Well, you know, I'm talking about
mm-hmm.
the city of Detroit.
Yes,
we were the victim of a one-horse economy town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the automobile industry was going, I mean, you know, cotton was, fish was jumping and the
mm-hmm.
cotton was high.
Yep, yep.
To use that phrase. And,
yes.
You know, unless you can have some other kind of economies to shift gears and to pick up the slack from where something falls off, God forbid that, you know, this thing doesn't repeat itself.
Tom, I really appreciate your call from Detroit there. I want to turn to Chicago for just a moment and Kilha. He's senior director of the Pew Charitable Trust. He oversees work on state and local government, economic development. Kilha, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
So we can't argue with Tom calling in from Detroit. It was a one-horse economy. That horse got in big trouble. What should happen then that might have been, made Detroit a different story from what we have seen for years now, Kilha?
Well, I think lawmakers at the state and local level have limited ability to intervene in the short term. They really have to have a more longer-term view and perspective and make the appropriate kind of investments in order to set the city and the state up for future success. Detroit and Flint are symptoms of economic restructuring, companies moving down to the southeast region of the United States or even overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a challenge that lawmakers are dealing with, not in Flint and in Detroit, but all over the country.
So what should happen? I mean, traditionally, we talk about a lot about labor mobility, the idea that maybe all those workers would just go somewhere else and integrate. Maybe they go to the southeast or who knows where, but that things would work themselves out. Why didn't that happen here? Or should there have been some other approach, like what, Kil?
Well, you know, when we look nationally, we see that a number of local governments are in financial distress. It's not only a symptom of larger economic conditions, but promises that they've made that have largely tied their hands.
Like pension promises, for example.
Pension promises or other liabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And often these local governments are limping along, and it's usually an event that sets off a larger crisis. And in unfortunate cases, you have to file for bankruptcy in order to sort of restructure those obligations like they did in Detroit. In other places, the states have actively intervened early with technical assistance or even increased state aid to try to get them through the budget challenges so that they can think more long-term. But this is not a problem that's easy to solve.
Another call from Detroit here. John. John, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My criticism of the Emergency Manager Act comes from the fact that apart from the way it was murky and Byzantine passage of the act by our myopic state legislature, it was a symptom of Snyder's arrogance that all problems are monetary and can be solved with a sharp pencil, and it just can't be done that way. He never allowed the city, or any city, or the Detroit public school system, to express its will through the democratic process. As to how it got that way, well, you know, if the city is partially at blame, the state is even more to blame. The revenue sharing that was withheld from the city of Detroit and the city of Flint, you know, it caused them to make the problem even worse. And it's just a myopic view by our Tea Party Republican legislature.
John, let us pick it up. Stephen Henderson, how do the politics of this play out? And what about the democratic process, which, I mean, I know it was up against a real storm in these communities, but they didn't fix it. You know, the deficits were getting deeper and deeper. Versus what you can see as a sort of tyrannical, cold-blooded, bottom-line emergency manager system.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that the governor's approach to this is about the bottom line. He's saying there's no chance for these cities if they continue to spend more than they bring in, if they continue to borrow more than they can pay back, if they continue to promise to their employees benefits that they can't sustain.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not wrong about that. I think John used the right word. It's that it's a myopic view of it. It's saying that if you just sit down and balance the books, that you've solved the problem, and you really haven't. I mean, Tom, the previous caller, talking mm-hmm. about the population loss here in the city of Detroit, you talk about transit policy and housing policy over that population loss and how they have accelerated the decline here. Those are the things that really are behind all of this, and that we need the governor and the legislature to start focusing on and start thinking about ways that we might reverse. But there's really no appetite for that. There's no political appetite for that in Lansing these days.
Let's go to Elise calling from New Orleans, Louisiana. Elise, you're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Yes.
I'd like to look at just an underlying sort of, I don't know if it's a Puritan ethic philosophy, but we seem to have an underlying culture that believes that if you're poor, it's your fault, and it's because you're lazy. And if you're uneducated, it means that you're ignorant. And neither one of those things are true, but we blame people for that, and that seems to be where a lot of the problem arises.
If we thought differently, what might that mean for policy, for how we approach these challenges, Elise?
This is about the, yes, government is us. And even if you don't have a college degree, you still know what's right for you and what's right for your family. You might need suggestions from advisors of new tools or new methods,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't mean you hand the reins over to somebody else to drive.
Elise, I appreciate your call from New Orleans. Kilha in Chicago, do you see these problems metastasizing because, hey, it's the poor and maybe they're at fault or maybe they don't have political clout anyway, so let's ignore this?
That's a difficult question to answer. I think that, you know, poor communities, lower income communities have significant challenges that, you know, aren't as prevalent in, you know, the more well-off or major cities in the United States. You have a high incidence of distress at the local level in these small governments. But at the same time, I think, you know, when you're trying to turn around a city, getting the involvement of the local community is key. That's what Kevin Orr did during the Detroit bankruptcy. Time and time again, when we look out nationally, when local governments are seeking to turn around and the state is involved, they do consult the local government officials as well as the residents and the civic leaders quite actively. And that's one of the best practices that we've seen in our research. And it's something that really needs to be part of the solution going forward is, yes, you need to fix the bottom line, but you also need the community to buy into it and have a vision of where you want to go together.
Stephen Henderson in Detroit, do you see a kind of an attitude there that, well, these are poor communities and we don't have to grapple with these problems as urgently as we might with others? And so,
sure.
But how does that sustain? Because we're already seeing the problems for Michigan as a whole coming out of this that Kevin Orr said, you know, be careful, you might see it in the future. It looks to me like we're seeing them now.
Yeah, I mean, the depth of poverty and isolation in the city of Detroit didn't change as a result of the bankruptcy. The bankruptcy fixed government and fixed the financial imbalance that government had, but you still have all these other imbalances in the city, and poverty is one of the biggest ones. One of the things that we're starting to see in Detroit is that the levels of concentrated poverty and isolated poverty, in other words, people who can't even get to another community that has more resources, is starting to look not like urban areas but like rural areas, places like Appalachia and places like that. I mean, we really are moving into a new era of urban poverty in places like Detroit that really cry out for different kinds of solutions. And it is very difficult to get people to focus on that. I mean, a lot of people believe, as the caller said, that the poor are responsible for their own lot in life and that they're not deserving of help. But as Kevin Orr pointed out, you know, this is something that's starting to affect communities all over the place, and not just urban places like Detroit. We're starting to see it in other parts of the mm-hmm. state. And so if you don't start to focus on it, it's going to become a much bigger problem.
Kilha, I want to get into what some of those different approaches might be, but help us understand the map of this. Where else? What other cities, urban areas do you see at most risk around the country? You look all over the nation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you see some high-profile cities that are under distress, like Atlantic City, and that's the result of four casino closings in recent years, as well as increased competition from other states with respect to gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see places like Hillview, Kentucky, East Cleveland, Ohio, or Desert Hot Springs, California, even North Las Vegas. And in North Carolina, the treasurer, who monitors local governments pretty regularly, has over 100 local governments under the distress watch list. And so it's pretty prevalent throughout the country.
What new approaches or old approaches that we haven't really exercised do you see as being valuable now then, Kil? Where should we be rolling? What approach should we roll toward?
Well, I think, you know, monitoring and early intervention is a real key asset for a state in terms of turning around a local government. The earlier you can get in and turn around the finances, the more cost-effective it is, and the chances are you don't have to take over the city. In the event that you have to intervene more severely, like you have in Detroit or in Flint, some suggest like a local control board, which leaves the elected officials in place, but offers the local elected officials, the financial expertise and the tools to essentially fix the budgets themselves is really key, and that's been successful in places like Washington, D.C.
Stephen, what about, from your perspective, bigger philosophical shifts that we may have to adopt as urban centers get in this much trouble to begin to pull them out and prevent others from following in there?
One of the big things that we need to focus on in Michigan is transit policy. It's very difficult if you live in Detroit and you're poor. It's really hard to get from where you live to where the jobs are, which is mostly out in the suburbs, and we have wholly dysfunctional transit here in Southeast Michigan, so that people end up walking 10, 15, some of them 20 miles back and forth to work every day. And again, housing policy. I mean, look at the sprawl that we've indulged here in the state of Michigan, people moving further and further and further away from the urban core and being subsidized by state government and by other local governments in order to do it. Those are the kind of policies that helped take away from the economic stability here in Detroit and other places. We've got to start looking at ways to rethink that and, again, give people more reasons to stay in urban centers, not just as residents but also as job creators. There have to be more jobs available to people in cities like Detroit.
In a few seconds, do you see the state politics in Michigan changing to be more focused on the kind of approach that you've just outlined, Stephen?
I don't. The governor's not focused on it. The legislature is not focused on it. I don't know what it's going to take to turn that around.
You could hardly have bigger warning signals than we've seen out of Flint and Detroit. Stephen Henderson at WDET, the show Detroit Today, and at the Detroit Free Press, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today, Stephen.
Thank you.
And Kil Ha at the Pew Charitable Trusts, following state and local government there. With us today out of Chicago, Kil Ha, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm at Tom Ashbrook, NPR on Twitter. This is On Point.